You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, it's all about the economy, stupid. Last week, Davie Root and Annabel Bishop told me that they expected economic growth to decline by between 2 and 3% for the full year. That was before the Reserve Bank came out and cut rates and then forecast a contraction in GDP of only 0.2%, which I think most people scoffed at. Now we've had the news that we will officially enter a 21-day lockdown. We're only going to see essential services and businesses allowing to continue trading. I don't know why they allow us mugs in the radio game to continue, but they do consider us an essential service, maybe the public broadcaster. Anyway, it does look like things can only get worse for the economy. So we've invited Chief Economist at the Bureau for Economic Research in Stellenbosch, Hiku Pinner, to gaze into a very hazy crystal ball. Hiku, very difficult to make forecasts. So thank you for agreeing to come on to the show and talk about what this impact might be. Firstly, let's start with how much we produce in GDP terms on a daily basis in a normal environment.
Yeah, so if one and good evening, sorry, if one takes the real GDP, the value of real GDP of last year, that's about 3.1 trillion rand. So if you divide that by 365 days, of course, not every day is the same output. We have weekends, etc. But let's assume every day has the same amount of GDP just for this discussion. Then it's about 9 billion rand per day.
That is a staggeringly large number. If you multiply that out over 21 days, you're talking somewhere in the region of 200 billion in lost GDP.
That's correct. Now, of course, one must, you know, with these things, there's always a lot of caveats. We will not, of course, lose that full amount because, as you already mentioned, some essential services are continuing. So the health sector, for example, obviously in these times, they will continue. A lot of other government services, the coal mines will still be operational to supply Eskom with coal. So, I mean, it will not be a total deadweight loss, but, I mean, there's no question it's going to be a massive and unprecedented hit to the economy.
What would that equate to if we were to say a decline in GDP in percentage terms? As I said in my introduction, we're already looking at 1 or 2 or 3% decline for this year. Even before COVID hit, we were in recession. The Eskom situation just is trundling along. It doesn't see any sort of resolution this year, at least in sight. So things weren't looking good. And now this happens as well. What are you anticipating for the full year?
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate your introduction again, it is very, very difficult because there are so many uncertainties. So one really is sort of working with scenarios here. So let's assume that 190, 200 billion rand hit to the economy, let's assume we spread that out over the second quarter. So we have the 3 weeks now, but then we assume there's not a recovery in the rest of the second quarter. So let's say we have that full hit for the second quarter. But then, of course, you have to think about the recovery. So if you then assume that we get the entire 190, 200 billion rand back in the third quarter. Now, some of the listeners may think that is a strong assumption to make, but let's say we manage to do that, and you then have some positive growth. So that means you have a very strong recovery in the third quarter. It means that your level is simply back where it was before, but in terms of growth, it then bounces back quite a lot. Let's say you have then a mild continuation in the fourth quarter, then you can get to some of the other analysts you've spoken to, let's say about 2.5% contraction in GDP. If, on the other hand, you say that we get this hit in the second quarter, but there are lingering effects, there might be a second wave of contagion, the global economy, of course, may linger weaker into the third quarter, etc., etc. So you don't get a recovery in the third quarter, your recovery is postponed to the fourth quarter. I mean, then you're looking in the terrain of a 4% contraction for the full year.
And I agree with you, one has to paint scenarios. It's very difficult to speculate or forecast with any certainty what sort of bounce back we might see. If any, to your point, obviously there's going to be a lot of pent-up demand, but will we just see another wave of infections once we lift a lot of the restrictions that we're seeing currently? I think that's also why the markets are paying particular attention to what's going on in the likes of China and Italy. So, a very difficult game, as I said to you earlier, Hiku. Just one final comment on what the state has offered so far. Obviously, fiscally, the cupboards are very bare. Dondo Mogajani saying, and quoted in Business Day earlier today, that Treasury is working to limit the fiscal deficit due to COVID-19 and is trying to offer support measures by perhaps cutting back expenditure elsewhere. But what else could the government do in a situation like this? It's delayed certain payments like a percentage of PAYE. There's talk of the UIF fund. But other than that, how could we get creative around supporting businesses?
Well, I mean, so the rest of the, well, let me say not the rest of the world, but a number of other countries globally are, you know, are really throwing extreme amounts of money at this problem. You know, so you're looking at 5 to 10% of GDP stimulus measures in some countries. Again, the word stimulus is a bit difficult in the current environment. Let's rather call it mitigating factors. But it is things like, but perhaps it's on a much bigger scale than we've announced, to sort of support cash flow for SMMEs, for example, over this period, support people that are on part-time work now or may lose their jobs to support their income in the foreseeable future. We've already had some announcements on unemployment insurance funds being used for that purpose. I must say, if one thinks a bit broader, you know, things like, and now we're stepping on toes, but things like the public sector wage bill, I think this is, these are, of course, extraordinary circumstances. So this may be a situation where the public sector workers can come to the table and say, look, we understand you need additional funds to help with this crisis. We are going to take some pain in terms of not retrenchments, but in terms of our wages. That may be unlikely, but this is certainly the circumstances where, you know, one needs to perhaps save on that in order to release some funds for support for the crisis.
Yeah, one certainly hopes that we don't let a good crisis go to waste, and this does actually aid the implementation of those deep structural reforms that we so desperately need in South Africa. We almost forget about them in the time of COVID-19, but fundamentally, unless we get that right, then all of the rest of the issues that we're talking about are academic. Hiku Pienaar, Chief Economist at the Bureau for Economic Research, thank you for your time. We're joined now by independent market analyst Chris Gilmore. Chris, good evening. You actually, and I really appreciated the stance you took initially, you took a lot of flak for it, but you just applied common sense and looked at the issue and questioned whether or not the medicine that was being applied was likely to kill the patient as well. And therefore, was it draconian? Was it over the top? Do you think a 21-day lockdown is harsh on the evidence so far?
Michael, good evening. Look, I think all the evidence around the world suggests that the only way you can flatten that trajectory of the virus at this point in time is to have a lockdown, and an effective lockdown at that. And the more effective it is, the more likely it is you will get a flatter curve. Now, look, the Chinese, of course, took it to extremes when they locked people in their apartments in Wuhan. And reports vary as to what actually happened to these blue devils. But, you know, in a totalitarian regime like China, you can do that sort of thing. You can get away with it. In a democracy, it's much more difficult. I think a better example is Singapore. I suppose you could perhaps refer to that as being a benign dictatorship. But there, at least, they seem to have got a good result with the lockdown, because people do obey the law and they do what they're told. And as a result, they've got a good result. And they've got a good result in South Korea as well. So I really think it depends on the nature of the people with whom you're dealing. Are they a population that likes being told what to do? And I think the Brits have demonstrated categorically they don't like being told what to do. And it comes out in the wash. As I say, you look at China, that's the most extreme example. It's been very, very effective. Singapore and South Korea, also very effective. And in varying degrees, Germany, funnily enough, has been very effective. I mean, their fatality rate is less than 1%.
I was going to pick up on the German outlier almost. What have the Germans done, considering that that fatality rate has been so low, and they do have a fairly old population? The demographics aren't in their favour as much as they perhaps are our favour.
Yeah, look, again, I suppose it's because they're a very ordered society. They do tend to do what they're told, even when the authorities say so. But if you go across the border to Italy, I think the big factor that has clouded the situation there is the very large Chinese immigrant population, legal or otherwise, that exists in Lombardy and has for a long time. And many of those Chinese work in what I can only describe as being Italian sweatshops. I mean, there's been articles in The Economist and The Guardian and other such good publications to that effect. And in the town of Prato, for example, there's a lot of these factories. A lot of the Chinese, you know, they went back for Chinese New Year and came back and brought the virus with them. I saw an article today from the World Economic Forum, funnily enough, that suggests that the virus may well have been circulating in Italy as long ago as last autumn. So again, you know, Italy is a huge outlier, but at least even there, you know, you're starting to get a modicum of good news. For 3 days on the trot now, you've got a declining number of fatalities.
Yeah, it does look like they potentially have turned the corner. One is looking at these examples out of Italy and China to see how long it might take to recover. We're still in the very early phases of this whole process, and numbers from Dr. Adrian Saville earlier today showed the COVID-19 impact data from China, with Shanghai City reporting that 89% of SMEs are back at work. Coal consumption on a day-to-day basis up 4.4%, still 15.3% below the long-term average. And the traffic delay index, which is something that they use to measure activity in China, has normalized, except Wuhan. So it does seem to suggest a fairly rapid recovery here, Chris.
Yes, no, you're right. And I think it does demonstrate that if you adopt the kind of lockdown strategies that I just described, ruthless and harsh, and as only the Chinese can do, then you do get the results. So to go back to your very first question, are they effective? Absolutely. If they are followed to the letter and people understand. Look, in China, people don't actually have to understand.
No.
They just deal with it.
Exactly. It's got nothing to do with compliance. Well, tomorrow, I believe, we're going to hear from the security cluster. They're going to be rolling out their plans on the lockdown. And all of those questions that I've been seeing circulating in my community WhatsApp group relating to things like, can we walk the dogs? Can we jog? Can we go out and, I don't know, kick a ball? All of those things are going to be addressed tomorrow. We'll have to wait and see just how compliant South Africans are. But I think the advice, certainly, Chris, as you've been saying, would be to stay at home. It is the right thing to do. That was Chris Gilmore, our independent market analyst, with the latest on the lockdown.